Good, and here we are again. So, 10 o'clock to be on time. We're going to continue with that time, iTime watch. Yeah, so here we go with the plenary session, which is recognizing health promotion's contribution changing Europe. And the moderators will be for this session, Dr. Carmen Cabezas from the Public Health Agency of Catalonia and Professor Paolo Conto of University of Cagliari, Italy. The floor is yours.
Thank you and good morning again. We start with our first plenary session, and Stefan van der Broek in the presentation already explained the process of this conference. I think it's very important, particularly in the health promotion world, to start with recognizing health promotion contribution. Very often in our projects, we are telling that it's important for the community to recognize their assets, to recognize their capacity to work together, their capacity to change the world. So it's important in the 70th anniversary of IHP and looking at European health promotion to start recognizing our contribution in the last 70 years. Because only recognizing this, we will be able to change our, to be flexible, to change in better what we are doing, and also to find the new ways and new challenges. And we start immediately with the two speakers that we have to get today. And the two speakers also represent, in my opinion, another important aspect of health promotion and of this conference. We are looking globally and locally in some way. We have a representation from Catalonia, so of a place where we are not able to be, but where we want to be for this conference. And then the representation for WHO, so for the most global organization in health promotion and public health. Now I give the floor to my co-chairs, Dr. Carmen Cabezas.
Thank you, Professor Conto. It's my pleasure to present Elia Diez. Elia Diez is a good friend of mine, but also, and especially, he's the head of the Preventive Programs and Intervention Service at the Public Health Agency of Barcelona. She's a physician by training and holds a master and a doctorate in public health, mainly dedicated to health promotion, equity, and urban health. She's a passionate about the development and evaluation of community interventions, methodology and research on public health and health equity. Is head of the Enhanced Wellbeing Unit in the Department of Health Promotion at the World Health Organization. I think that is your profile, and I think it will be a very interesting presentation, and I like to emphasize the work of Elia Diez and their team and her team in the Health at the Neighborhoods program in the city of Barcelona. Elia, the floor is yours.
Oh, thank you very much for your kind words, Carmen Cabezas, and for all the organization for inviting me and having this opportunity. I share my presentation. My title was, because I wasn't able to find a proper title, The Harvest. And I found this photograph of harvesting the lettuces on a roof in a facility in Barcelona, where I'm serving at the Public Health Agency. And I have prepared the presentation thinking of several important changes that have been occurring in health promotion. One of them is that the shift from of the focus from death and disease to health in the last half of the century. And then it was unusual to talk about well-being, quality of life satisfaction or happiness, which is quite usual now, and complements what we have been doing in health promotion. Let's look at what has been happening in the last decades. We go to 1900, but see that life expectancy in Europe was below 50 years for most of the countries, and then in the 50s was much better until about 60s, 70, and then in 2000 was about 75 years for half of the Europe, and now, right now, most European countries have a life expectancy about 80 or 85 years. And this has happened also, that the child mortality of children below younger than 5 years old was important in the 50s. But right now, look at the waves only, not the numbers. Right now, all the European region has almost any kind of child mortality. And then if we jump to these new indicators, for example, happiness, we find these indicators in our world in data. We see that, I put this here, that here in the ordinates, we have 90% of people feeling, answering that they are happy, and these are the years until 2014, that Swedish rate their happiness very high, and in general, and Switzerland, many countries, different countries, not only from Europe, and in general, they are higher than 60%, but in general they are increasing, and it's impressive the increase in Zimbabwe, for example, and this reflects what happened in the recession in Spain, which was over there and decreased here, and the opposite for German people, increasing. So another big change has been to the understanding of the causes of disease and now the causes of health. And then there have been some points that deserve attention. Health for All in the 2000, a strategy, NCD and risk factors, and the models, and several models that are usual now. This global strategy for Health of All was visionary. Put on the table of the policies and the strategies that the world health was completely related to socioeconomic problems and trends. This is in the index. And then we jumped on the, we were lucky enough to have this global burden of disease since 1990, which gave figures to the most important risk factors. And then we were able to know, to understand since that moment every year that high blood pressure had many deaths in the world. In this case, no smoking, air pollution, obesity gave a strong knowledge on non-communicable diseases and risk factors and where to put our attention. This has not been the same for all European regions. And for example, this is only example of Eastern Europe. We have this high blood pressure who went up in the 2000, in the 90s and 2000, and went to decrease and decreased in the last decade. But steady as high cholesterol, smoking, high blood sugar, alcohol, and the other. So it remains more or less the same. And then other important turn point is are the ecological models. We have seen that those have been become usual, that the individual depends on relationships, on community and society, and more and more important drivers. And this is what has been central for health promotion for decades, and I don't talk about it, but these are the living and working conditions and the general socioeconomic, cultural, and environmental conditions who shape all the health of community and the behaviors of the individuals and the individuals by them. Numbers have been put also on the contribution of every health determinants. And this is a model used in the States by the Wisconsin University, and which states that the life, the length, and the quality of life, the health outcomes, are completely shaped by four factors, groups of factors: health behaviors, they say it's about 30%, clinical care, healthcare, 20%, social and economic factors, 40%, and environmental factors, physical, built environment, 10%. And each one of them has several components. The usual health behavior components: tobacco, diet, alcohol, sexual activity, or, for example, physical environment, air and water quality, or housing and transit, and as well as education, employment, income. Okay. And then inequalities arose some decades ago, not so many, 15 years ago. And we were taught about social gradients, social inequalities, that lower levels of inequality are completely associated with better health outcomes, that the causes of the illness and ill health and that had other causes which determined them, and that discrimination, segregation, and stigma provokes illness and death and pain, and that all of this is due to power axis. And this was the review of the WHO asking for compiling evidence, analyzing and compiling evidence on how to promote health equity, which stated that poverty and unequal living conditions are the result of poor social policies and programs, unfair and economic arrangements, and bad politics. That tackling the social determinants of health reduces the health gap. That gender equity is as important as all the other equity axes. And emitted three big recommendations: that we needed to improve the daily living conditions, that we needed to redistribute the power and money, and we needed to measure and understand the problems and assessing the impacts. And let's see, for example, what has happened with life expectancy by income in the world, the whole world. And then here you have the life expectancy from 20 to 90 years. And here you have the income in a geometric, 500, 1,000, 2,000, 4,000. And these are the world countries. And then the colors are those. Europe, you are in Europe, you are in Europe, and yellow, green Americas, blue Africas, and Asia. And then you see that in the 50s, America, Canada mainly, Canada and the States, had this high income and high life expectancy. And Europe, we were over there, but Asia was over there, scattered, and then this was Africa. And then in 2000, in 50 years, everything changed. And you see that this trend is more horizontal. It's a straight, there is a clear correlation, but it's not so sharp. And then what we have seen is that even in the life expectancy grow in all the countries, and not always associated to income, but still. And now what has been happening? That all the regions are over there, but Africa remains behind. And there are infant, and this is important for us for from a European point of view about health promotion, that in green we find Europe evolution along this decade, and this is the top decile, the top decile share of total income. This means that the 10% of those who earn the most affluent part of the population, this 10% in terms of income, have a share of 30% or more, 35% in Europe, evolving, and it's more or less steady in the last decade, even though the recession, this inequality has not grown, although it's high. But look what has been happening in the other parts of the world. In the States, it's always growing. This 10% owns almost 50% of the incomes. And this is much worse in India. And this is quite bad, has been in Russia, but remains steady since then. So, dying from an NCD for women has this shape in, and for men has exactly the same shape. The only thing which changes here is the scale. Women die less than men all over the world, which may be a systematic. And then there are, for example, inequalities inside our Europe. This is the pure alcohol consumption by capita. These are the consumptions, and these countries have smaller one and this big one. We have this also. There is a conference parallel in salutogenesis next days, and all of us have been thinking of this model, which adds or complements the view of health promotion in an important way. And this is illness and death, this is health protection, this is preventive measures, and this is health promotion. And we should go up to make the river safer by planting trees over there and not allowing great problems with the waters. Well, in the last century, not only the Ottawa Charter stated that that there were prerequisites to control the health, which were peace, shelter, education, food, sustainable resources, income, social justice, equity. But before, Winslow and Seigerist had told words in similar terms. It flourished, although in 86. Alma-Ata Primary Health Conference in the 78 was also important. It paralleled many of the main themes of the Ottawa Charter for Health Promotion, which you know perfectly, and we are not going to talk about it. But it's the core of what we have been doing for decades. So another point, the important point, has been this UN Sustainable Development Goals for SDGs for 2013. And this had these goals and targets. The aims were to reduce poverty and inequality, to work on social determinants of health, such as hunger and malnutrition, and included clear health objectives as reducing maternal and child mortality and providing universal health coverage. So what happened in Shanghai was that both goals converged, and it was stated that promoting health was the same than promoting sustainable development. Another product of Shanghai, very good for me, is that the Ottawa Charter was collapsed in three main categories. One, good governance, building healthy policies. 2, healthy settings, healthy cities, and 3, healthy literacy, health education, and the traditional health promotion, increasing skills, not only knowledge, allowing to people to have the best choices for their lives. And this has been being done for decades in all Europe, children, education, elders, workshops and education. And for example, this example of health literacy, clever example, how to communicate to the people when was worried with the thrombosis caused by AstraZeneca vaccine, in order that they understood the risks and took the best choice for their health, which was and is vaccine, being vaccinated. So yeah, if you compare the risk of getting a thrombosis by a surgery or by having contraception, and then you see that you have these very, very small risks, you're able to choose better what you want. Which are, and what about policies? The first pillar of health promotion since Shanghai. Well, strategies of health promotion to change policies usually are advocacy and lobbying, media advocacy, agenda setting, using opportunities to put in the agenda, to use policy windows, and overall creating and enforcing laws and regulations. And for example, this has been growingly put in place in Europe. For example, there are recommendations about alcohol. Instead of saying people not to drink, there are 10 recommendations. Some of them are called best buys. And this is how in 2016, in European countries were applying these measures. And some of them are leadership or drinking driving policies and control measures or monitoring have been more importantly adopted, but other, which are very, very important too, well, one of the most important, pricing policies, taxes on alcohol have not been widely used as they should. And the third or the second pillar of health promotion, healthy settings. We know schools have been healthy schools, healthy workplaces, healthy health centers, hospitals, primary health, healthy cities. A great movement which in Europe has more than 100 cities, networking, healthy neighborhoods or beaches. And I showed this example of beaches because we are right now involved and it was easy for me. This is the beach in Barcelona. In Girona, is much better. Near Girona is much better, but this is our quite nice beach. And then now we are piloting the test to promote smoke-free beaches. And it's a recommendation, it's not a prohibition, but we will see. We are piloting and testing with a comparison group of beaches, and we will see what happens. You may do healthy places only by painting the sidewalk or painting the streets. During the confination, these some streets in Barcelona were painted in order to widen the space for walking in a safe way in very high, very densely neighborhoods. This allowed more place taken to the cars. We showed this because we know that many cities have taken similar initiatives all over Europe. And also, we like to make clear that we have now quite good information on the results of health promotion initiatives activities, because before we had intuitions or ideas, but now we know that a 40 reduction on long duration car trips substituted by public health transport and cycling trips may reduce 300 dailies per year, or that the economic return of investing in cycle networks may be about between 3 and 14 the investment. And about community action, which was...
We are close to 25 minutes. You have still 2-3 minutes.
3 minutes, okay. Then for community action, here is the distribution of family available income in Barcelona. And these are the life expectancies, which are for men and women, which are similar. And this is this Barcelona Health in the Neighborhoods project, which tries with the strategy of community health, applied only with equity criteria. I'd like to put these words about building evidence. No, we have now quite good evidence about the pathways between the external factors in biological results, health, and inequalities in health, and about effectiveness and cost effectiveness of health promotion. This is very important. And here there are some of the places we all may find this evidence. For example, look at here, affordable housing tax incremental financing is only based in expert opinion. Bike and pedestrian master plans has some evidence, but automated speed enforcement cameras is scientifically supported. So the conclusions are that in about changing what has done health promotion in changing Europe is that we have had great health improvements, that health indicators have been shifting from illness to health, that inequalities have not increased but remain, and that the job has been done in upstream policies, in working with all the sectors, in participation, in empowering individuals and communities and societies and organizations, in equity, in health literacy, in health education, and evidence has been built. But we need to do, and then we need to do more health promotion inside our region, but look also to the rest of the planet, and which are in worse conditions than we have been and we are. So thank you very much.
Thank you to you for this very clear and complete demonstration of what health promotion means and what health promotion can do. I also would like to remember to people that they can put the questions and comments using the questions functions in the program. And this question can be used at the end of the second presentation for some answer from the speakers and some general conclusions. Now, I would like to introduce Dr. Fakhtem Ben Abdelaziz, who is head of the Enhanced Wellbeing Unit in the Department of Health Promotion at the WHO. In particular, she oversees the work on good governance for health and wellbeing. I would like to emphasize the two words together. And working in particular with healthy cities, health promoting schools, health literacy, community engagement, and in particular urban governance, that I think is very crucial for us in this moment. Please, I give you the floor.
Thank you very much. So good greetings to all of you colleagues, and it's a real delight to be with you in this 11th Conference of IOHP Europe. I would like to thank the organizers for their invitation and must admit that I wish we were able to meet face-to-face in Girona a beautiful city. So special thanks to the organizers for facilitating this this session, and also for all the help that I received in preparing for this presentation. We have heard from Elia about many aspects in which health promotion has contributed to the public health agenda. So in my presentation, I intend to share with you some of the updates on the work that WHO is doing, but I would like to also call for some points of reflection to see how health promotion can enhance its contribution and what kind of aspects can actually be then explored, strengthened, and as it was mentioned, countries are at different stages, then provide support to countries that have a different stage of evolution in terms of health promotion. So the title of my presentation is Advancing Health Promotion and Well-being for Health for Healthier Populations. And the reason why I wanted to also add well-being is that, as you all know, WHO is custodian to the target 3, which is now health and well-being. So this is the first time of history that we have actually added this word and the component, even though within WHO, well-being and quality of life has always been considered. So to provide you with some context, I would like to, as it was mentioned by Elia earlier, the context in which we're having this discussion is the Sustainable Development Goals discussion. And in this discussion, we would like to again highlight that all the areas that we have covered, whether we are talking about diseases or risk factors or exposure, we're saying that all the goals, all the targets are interconnected. And what we need to do is really not only mainstream health promotion in all these targets, but see how we can support and what kind of demonstrated approaches we would like to suggest. You are all familiar with this Global Action Plan for Healthy Lives and Well-being for All that also highlights some accelerators, and some of the accelerators were actually demonstrated approaches supported by health promotion. As it was mentioned in the previous presentation, again, health promotion, well-being, quality of life is not a new concept, but it has been there before the constitution of WHO, but it was really pinned down when WHO, in the WHO constitution. We all know that in the Ottawa Charter for Health Promotion, the context in which people are living, the role of different stakeholders was further highlighted. I won't go into the details in the different key milestones in the agenda of health promotion because it was very well presented in the earlier presentation. But what I would like to emphasize is that there is now, with a 13th General Program of Work of WHO, a real political commitment, a real emphasis on shifting from individual diseases and disease approach to addressing upstream determinants of health. And for that, we have what we call the triple billion target, which is about, again, 1 billion people, more people benefiting from universal health coverage, 1 billion people supported during emergencies. But you can see here and highlight the 1 billion more people enjoying better health and well-being. And here we really think about, again, promoting health, preserving the health capital, but also quality of life. So within the department where we are located, so as it was mentioned in the introduction, so the unit of health enhanced well-being is located within the Department of Health Promotion. And as you all know, with the 13th JPW and under the leadership of Dr. Tedros, there was a new division created called Healthier Populations. And that's the first time of history. And really it looks at everything outside the health sector. And a global framework on healthier population was produced in 2020 that was endorsed by member states. And this, under this global framework on healthier population, the main objectives are really to build safe societies, supporting societies, and healthy environments, looking at those key determinants that are highlighted within this framework. So Recalling the health promotion responses, we have seen in the earlier presentation the different approaches that were promoted to one, influence public health programs, two, highlight some of the causes behind the diseases, and three, try to influence the mindset and the approaches. So if we go back into the global conferences and look at what was achieved since Ottawa, we can see that each of those conferences tried to respond to a need that was very predominant during that context. So the Ottawa was a response to a need for a new public health approach. Adelaide was to highlight the value of health, equity, access, development, and the notion of accountability. In Sundsvall, the concerns were over the threats to the global environment and the need to highlight social justice. In Jakarta, this is where the social determinants of health really was seriously discussed and highlighted, especially when in the economic development, we have seen these major disparities between countries, although the various progress that were made. In Mexico, the promotion of health and social development was put as a central element of the agenda, and the government role in addressing this was quite determinant. In Bangkok, during the time of where the discussion was taking place about, again, globalization and the impact of globalization, and we saw different movements somehow a little bit colliding, the discussion was about how do we address these growing inequalities between and within countries? How do we address this new pattern of consumption and the risks that are posed to this environment and change? And you can see everything is about, again, linked to the economic development and the impact it has on the health of the population, but also on the social dimensions. When we met in Nairobi, following the Bangkok conference and the multiple recommendations that were presented during that conference, we noticed that there were somehow a gap in implementation. So we know what are the issues, we know what needs to be done, but why aren't we doing what is required? So in that conference, we talked about the gap in implementation and how can we narrow down the gap. And if you recall, during those conferences, we spoke also about the settings approach, health literacy, good governance for health and well-being. And the discussion was supposed to somehow recommend some strategies for member states or countries to now narrow the gaps, especially in inequity. During the Helsinki conference, the discussion was about, okay, how do we mainstream health within those public health? How do we make sure that health and a review or an analysis of the health impact is systematically conducted by non-health sectors? So you are all familiar with the health in all policy strategy and all the actions. And what we were hoping to achieve, so this agenda is part of healthy public policies, but what we were hoping to achieve is really a good governance for health and well-being. But somehow this is a process that takes time. And for this process to really reflect on actual concrete commitment by member states, it has to be known, well understood, but also the mechanisms have to be then thought through and established within the governance system of a country. Then we met again in 2016 in Shanghai, and the context at that time was the launch of the SDGs agenda. And the purpose here was to showcase that health promotion was relevant to all the SDG agenda. So even though WHO is custodian of Target 3, in all of these targets, in the 17 targets, health promotion can play a key role. And as Elia mentioned, we focused in this conference on key demonstrated approaches of health promotion, including good governance for health, health literacy, social mobilization, particularly during emergencies, and the settings, especially cities, was also highlighted. And this was reflected through the mayor's consensus for the SDG. So now in December this year, we are going to organize the 10th Global Conference on Health Promotion. The overall theme is going to be well-being. But does well-being mean the same thing? And what does it mean for health promotion community? What we know now is that within the health promotion agenda, the health promotion agenda has to operate and be rethought in a different context. What happened more than 30 years ago is different. I have shown the evolution, and I have shown that how health promotion agenda has been evolving since Ottawa, trying to address the current context. Now, we know that It's a context of turbulence, COVID-19, infodemics, digitalization, new ways of policy development, the environmental pressure, the demographic change, changes in social relationship, the important role of media now, and the change in education. So many uncertainties, many changes in terms of governance, in terms of players and social relationship and political relationships. So what does this mean for health promotion? And can we keep on doing business as usual? So what are the necessary actions, recommendations, approaches that health promotion has to come forward or adapt to cope with this uncertainty and complexity that we are living, that is unprecedented? And what are, again, those harmful determinants of health? When we speak about determinants of health, we think systematically of NCDs. We speak about behavioral risk factors generally. But when we speak now in the digital world, in the role of different players like the GAFA, what does it mean in terms of data, ethics, social relationships? These are so key determinants of health that I believe were not really given sufficient importance, but COVID-19 has accelerated the role of those risk factors. And I believe a platform like this conference is a good platform to discuss this and then either provide some recommendations or then those key questions that need to be addressed. So moving forward, if we are to really keep the concept of health promotion being the process of enabling people to increase control over and to improve their health, what does it mean in this current context? We are all talking about building health, building resilience through health promotion to be able to cope with these limited resources or in that new context. But concretely, what does it mean? We speak about, again, the shift in paradigm. How do we sustain efforts to current and prepare for emerging challenges? As I mentioned, it's very important that we keep the effort of some countries in promoting the area, the discipline of health promotion and build the capacity. But for those who have a capacity that is already developed to really think about to anticipate some of the challenges, because health promotion has always been about avant-garde ideas and again, coping, but also predicting. And the context of now is about the discussion on the One Health approach. So health promotion has always been about people, planet, social determinants, ecological determinants of health. But again, what are the things that need to be strengthened, the approaches, but what are also what is required to cope with this current reality. So we all know that health promotion is a driver of healthier populations. And you may all know that in health promotion WHO headquarters, we are now engaged in the development of a global health promotion action plan to support the healthier population framework. So the vision is really about a world where everyone, every person can lead and enjoy a healthy life with dignity, opportunity, and within the community. And we looked at those trends universe that are taking place that I just showed to you now. And we look at them and suggest some health promotion approaches. What we intend to do through this global plan of action is to, one, strengthen health promotion as a discipline, strengthen health promotion as a lens for others to actually adopt a health promotion view in the programs that they are addressing and implementing, but also propose some approaches to help member states cope with the emerging challenges. So the intention is to really bend the future trends. So this is somehow, again, in a draft version, because it will be subject to a thorough, broad public consultation, but it's really about addressing current and emerging challenges, achieving a shift in paradigm, and that would then provide some action and interventions or recommendations that will help contribute, support a partnership, and help countries and people to cope and co-create somehow some of the solutions. We focused at this stage to some key demonstrated health promotion approaches, looking at the governance systems that promote also health and well-being, equitable policies that address key determinants of health, and a public and private partnership that will be for the collective and common goods, and generate some specific health literacy interventions in this digitalized world, but also ultimately promote civic engagement and social engagement, particularly in influencing current policies and change the dynamics between those decision makers, stakeholders. So these are some, I won't go into the details, but some of the interventions that can be somehow provided as part of those strategic directions, but these are still under discussion, and they will then be subject to, again, a broader review. I would like to share also that within the WHO, we are promoting an agenda for well-being, and that's, as I mentioned, it will be the subject of the next global conference. We all speak about well-being and we all put well-being in our text, but what is really the meaning of well-being? Are we talking about subjective well-being, which is very much, again, at individual level, or are we talking about nation of well-being and what this latter really represents? So what we have done as part of this agenda is really to look at what is existing within countries. You are all familiar with the concept of the happiness index, the well-being agenda in the well-being treasury, national plan of action on well-being. And we looked really at well-being from a governance perspective rather than individual perspective. And we looked at what all these agendas were aspiring to achieve. And we believe somehow that by sharing the different case examples of what countries have done to influence, again, the economic models, the social models, toward a model that is more inclusive, that is more in line with building resilient societies, a well-being agenda will enable a change in that mindset and increase the investment on health and quality of life. So the next global conference will be really about advancing an agenda on health promotion and well-being. It will it will then be a platform where the plan of action I just shared with you will be launched, but also a political document on well-being will be then hopefully issued with key, again, key calls, key element for a call for action. Because as I mentioned, well-being is a well-accepted and well-used terminology, but what it means in terms of practice, in terms of politics, in terms of governance, we don't have a clear agenda on this globally. It has always been about measurement, it has always been about individual, but we hope that this, through the global conference, we will really have some governance aspect that will be recommended for a political commitment. So it really to set, it will be to set the scene for the, to build an argument on well-being agenda, to share experiences, and to again have a political document that will be, that will then be proposed at the next World Health Assembly. The foundation for this political document are, as I mentioned, about building resilient society. And we think that this can only be achieved through, again, a balanced approach through people, planet, peace, and prosperity with a partnership that is for the collective good. So let me stop here, and I do apologize. I don't see the screen, so if I took longer than expected, I do apologize for that. Thank you very much. Over to you, Paolo.
Carmen, now.
Yes. Thank you so much, Paten and Elia. I think that the two presentations are very interesting and also complementary, and I think that all of us has learned very much about your presentations. I have I will ask all the participants to put some questions in the question part of the website. But in order to make a first question, I have a question for Elia. Elia, you have explained many things about the foundations of the health promotion and so on, and the history of the health promotion and the rationale. But I wonder if you could explain to us more details of the specific application of the health promotion foundations and theories at the city of Barcelona. And I would like if you could explain a little bit more about the Health in the Neighborhoods program, because I think it's one of the most interesting programs, and it's very related with one thing that is worrying for many of us, that is the growing inequalities in social inequalities and in health too. And maybe you can explain a little bit more of the Healing the Neighborhoods program.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Carmen. Yes, well, Healing the Neighborhoods is the title, the name of a strategy, which was grounded on a development on a strategy promoted or put in place by the Generalitat of Catalonia, the regional government, in the autonomous government in Catalonia, and whose name was Neighborhoods Law, and it was in a political moment with a social democrat, little left wing coalition, who was aware of the inequalities in territorial terms, and then lots of money were provided to reduce inequalities, not in health, but in land use, in healthy territories in some way, rebuilding zones, areas which had been very deprived, core areas in many cities and villages in Catalonia. So the Department of Health in Catalonia began a strategy in this way we told before. We have promoters use looking at catching the opportunity to put in place a strategy
to reduce health inequalities, which were a result of these socioeconomic inequalities. And then its name was Health in the Neighborhoods. Barcelona at the time, it was the late, the last part of 2006, 2007, something like this. And in Barcelona, the government, municipal government, was completely delighted, and the public health agency of Barcelona, with this idea. And then went on with more resources and more intensity to put more emphasis in this strategy. And then developed this strategy of Barcelona Health in the Neighborhoods, which follows extremely clear developmental phases, first of which is to be only developed in the neighborhoods which are in a deprived position, social deprived or socioeconomic deprived position, and then to have a clear commitment of the municipality political representatives of the districts affected, and then from the healthcare political responsible, and then of the public health political responsible. And then with all this, with this decision affecting in one or another neighborhood, primary healthcare general strategy is developed with a needs assessment and an asset assessment now of the neighborhood assets and needs, and then a public audiences where people may choose which are their main worries or needs or aspirations now, no? Talking about health promotion aspirations, and then groups with professionals of public health, but other intersectoral, really intersectoral groups develop interventions based in evidence, and then they are evaluated, and then they go on with this. Oh. This is, okay, I cut because it's long.
Yes, also, excuse me. So, because now we have some questions and we have only 3 minutes to close.
Yes, excuse me, please.
No, I'm sorry, but now people started to ask. Two questions for Faten. One, two different questions. One is about, very big probably, can you please explore what might be the new potential health determinants? And the second one is about the spiritual dimension of health in the context of well-being. So, new potential health determinants and spiritual dimension of health.
So thank you very much for the questions first. And it's a debate that is taking place at this stage. So what we are observing, and what the review has shown to us, is that the issue of, as I mentioned, infodemics, the issue of, again, the different partners, like the access to information quality, reliable, valid information. So the behavior, so the approaches that we have been adopting before are still relevant. But what it means in health literacy in the digital context, are there other aspects that we have not, again, addressed? Social mobilization with the instruments, IT instruments that we have now, the smartphones, the SSL, all this, how this can be used for social mobilization. But social mobilization of now and with the tools that we have is different from social mobilization 30 years ago. And there are new things that I would like to pose back to our colleagues on academe to tell us if there are things that we have missed in this global plan of action or health promotion. So there are multiples, but I really would like to invite you to, and I will share, of course, the link with the information with all of you, that to comment on this plan of action and give us your feedback. So we see multiples, new determinants that can be within the existing category or can lead to a category in itself. So I would like to pose you the question back so that we encourage you to do more research on this area, in this area. Spirituality, this is very much reflected in the work of that we are doing in the area of well-being. And I would like to say that this is very much inspired by the conference organized by IUHPE in New Zealand. If you recalled, again, the First Nations knowledge, all this discussion that took place about, if you recall during that conference, the respecting the ancestors, the planet, the environment, and all this will come under that concept. And this is something that was coming from IUHP conference in New Zealand. So I know I haven't answered fully, but it requires more time. But you will see this is reflected sufficiently or insufficiently, but we do in the Global Plan of Action and the discussion paper on well-being. And we count on you to tell us where the gaps are. Over.
I think we don't have time, but I just would like to recognize two questions. Maybe we don't have time to answer. One was emphasizing the problem with children. So how much is crucial, particularly after the COVID epidemics and the burden on children, COVID epidemics. So they were asking to tell something about this. And the second point was maybe to putting some kind of obstacle. So that the difficulty to work very often with convinced politicians to have a policy health oriented, and how much the relationship with policy health oriented and the gain elections. So this was probably suggesting some obstacles to this.
Can I add one last point, if I may? So I just presented some of the work that we are doing within this context, but I just would like to also inform that on 22nd of June, we are launching the Global Standards for Health Promoting Schools. And this is a joint initiative. And we have also an existing initiative called Urban Governance for Health and Wellbeing through civic engagement that we're implementing in five countries. And I'm really enjoying the discussion and the presentation of Elia in terms of neighborhoods, the focus on neighborhood to address, again, to find some social innovative solutions by the community for their context. So the information is available on the website, but if not, please do contact me. But this is very much addressing more in depth some of the questions that were addressed. Over, Paolo. Sorry for taking so much time.
Okay. Carmen?
No, yes, only to thank you to the presenters. And I think more of these topics will be discussed in the other plenary sessions. And we have the opportunity to go in depth in some of the aspects that especially Faten has been talking about. And there have been very interesting the two presentations.
So thank you again to presenters and to people who attended. And I think it's important to think about that we have a process of today. So now we were looking at what we were able to do, but also starting to think what we can be able, and we have other days to answer in some way to this challenge. So thank you again. Now we have a break, and then we will meet again in half an hour for parallel sessions and workshop and symposia. Maybe Oliver has to.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Paolo, Carmen, Faten, and Elia. I don't want to leave any one of you. Thank you very much. So interesting, this conversation, and so inspiring. How there's so many things have been said, and how we go from the local action into a global effect, and how we work with communities and how we can affect through the community to the global aspect. Now we go in, as Paolo said, we're going to a break. But before closing, I would like to remind you that at 11:30, we will be back here. And for this break, afterwards, we're going to go into the parallel sessions. I remind you to go to the networking. We can do one-to-one. We can do the chat. You can access through the lateral menu. You have the networking there, and you can even have the help desk. As I told you on the breaks, we have, if you have any doubts, technical issues, whatever, you can ask there. Go into Wanda, create your profile, and jump in. And you can find any of the speakers and presenters there, and you can ask any further questions that we might have. Thank you very much for asking questions in the chat and for making this interactive conference. We invite you as well to watch any of the relaxing videos and fun videos that we have as well in the platform. You can see scheduled there in the agenda. And not much more. Explain people there that we will do and see you back at 11 here. And then we have a couple more things. We'll have from now from 11 to 11:30 the break. From 11:30 to 1, we have the parallel sessions. And from 1 to 2, we'll have lunch breaks. Remember, in all these lunch breaks, to keep connected, keep in touch, and also relax. We're talking about well-being and health promotion. Relax, breathe, take a little bit of time for yourself as well. So see you in a bit and make the most of it. Thank you for being here and keep in touch. Remember, parallel sessions at 11:30. See you now.